Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Politics, got an interesting show this week. We're going to talk about something that's going on down in the Orlando area in terms of some pretty significant, fully evidenced voter fraud. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some economic numbers. We're going to do the economic numbers first. Unemployment today was 3.5%, although in the unemployed category, there were 5.8 million people. Home sales are really down today, and it's going to get worse as long as these mortgage rates continue to increase. But home sales today, Jimmy found the exact number, is 23.82, down 23.82%. Very, very big number. In terms of inflation, Jim, I'd like you to talk about those numbers.
Okay, so yeah, the inflation basically coming out from the Bureau of Labor and Statistics,
right,
through September. We've got overall 0.4% with the seasonal adjustment for September, and that's actually inflation over the last 12 months has increased 8.2%.
Yeah.
All right. Then the index for items less food and energy increase 0.6%. That's core basic inflation for September. Mm-hmm. That's up 6.6 over the last year.
Okay.
The core inflation rate is really what the Fed's looking at.
Yeah.
Now that, again, that reflects September when we had a sharp decline in energy prices. Now we've had a slight increase in energy and gasoline in particular over the last few weeks, and actually since these numbers came out. So you're going to see a different number in the next quarter, and the probability, a lot of the people that actually had to make purchases in the summer had to pay peak prices for like heating oil and for long-term commodities purchases.
And so it's going to get even worse this winter.
You bet, because we still have limited production. We still have a high regulatory environment, and you still have the crisis going on in Europe. So we're going to see overall those numbers up, and in particular, the Biden regime's policy of drawing down the National Strategic Petroleum Reserve is going to end. And of course, with the Saudi and OPEC agreement to cut 2 million barrels a day, when you get past this November 8th election, you're going to see another significant spike in oil prices.
That doesn't sound real good for Big Al, who right now is only paying about $120 a month for natural gas. I would predict that's probably going to go up significantly this winter, but we'll see what happens. Let's talk about the various averages, the Dow, the S&P, and NASDAQ. And I'd like Jim to weigh in on this, because he's got some very interesting points about these numbers. Because if you look at them for just today, you're going to say, well, maybe my IRA will come back. If you look at Dow Jones Industrial Average for today, you'll see it's up 2.6%. The S&P is up 2.4%, and the NASDAQ is up 3.15%. And this is a part I'd like Jimmy to explain, and that is, if you look at where the indices are, specifically the Dow, in comparison to the high, when a lot of us invested in our IRAs, is down 20 to 25%. So we're getting killed.
Absolutely. So the peak Dow was back in January 5th. And since then, we've had, not including today's numbers, because I can't actually do the math, or I could, but I'm not going to do the math on today's numbers. But basically, the Dow has been down over 20%, 21 to 22%. The S&P 500 is down 25%, and the NASDAQ has been down 33% year to date. Now, none of these indices have ended a year down more than 10% since 2008. So we don't know what's going to happen in the upcoming weeks and months, but the probability with all the indicators, the economic indicators of continued inflation, of a significant reduction in home sales, which really hits core inflation, we're going to see some, and of course, everybody expecting and analyzing and particularly planning for an economic decline over the next foreseeable future, you're going to see some problems with the Dow numbers as well.
I think it's going to happen, unfortunately, just about the day before New Year's. And that's about the time that people are really going to be throwing down the booze at the various New Year's Eve parties, because they're going to think about their IRAs, etc. Personal spending is up 0.6%, but as Jim mentioned to me off mic, you have to understand that of that 0.6% increase, most of it is coming on credit cards, and that's not, in my opinion, a very good sign, Jim.
No, I think that's a real problem, because we are increasing debt. Everybody's increasing debt right now.
Right.
Because they can't, because the inflation is so high. And this is certainly the people, not, these are not wealthy people. These are people at the lower end of the spectrum that are working month to month.
Right.
And of course, as we talked about early in the week in one of our podcasts, when we see numbers of 60% of Americans are actually living paycheck to paycheck,
yeah,
month to month.
That's a big number.
It's really hard to keep up with these inflation numbers.
Yeah. Having said that, let's talk a little bit about voter fraud. Let's go down to Orlando, Florida. Florida has a new office called the Office of Election Crimes and Security. They have collected enough data which shows evidence of systematic ballot harvesting in the Orlando area, and they want to see the state law enforcement agencies open a full-scale criminal investigation in that. Jimmy, comments?
Yeah, so Ron DeSantis put together this the Office of Election Crime and Security after the 2020 election because of the potential problems they have there. They want to do a good job and give every vote the legitimacy that it requires in order to make decisions in our democracy. And of course, what you see now with this woman, Cynthia Harris, who was actually running for a city commission or a county commission office, I believe, she's a Democrat, and she came forward and has given written testimony that written documentation under oath that there is a significant problem with voter harvesting, where people are going to homes in the in different urban areas, mostly in the Black community, which is why she's frustrated, and buying votes, or at least collecting up ballots and getting paid for that by progressive organizations.
Yeah.
And the unfortunate reality right now is that it's happening probably far more places than just in the area that they're looking at in Florida. We know there's videotape of this happening in Minneapolis, in Minnesota, with Ilhan Omar's district, where people were buying votes. It depends on who's going to enforce the law. And if you're in a Democratic-run area, it appears that they're trying to protect these types of operations rather than call them out, which is the unfortunate reality right now that we're facing in America, because people like Katie Hobbs in Arizona comes out and tells Cochise County that they can't hand count the ballots, that it must be machine counted, or they'll be facing criminal, action by the Secretary of State. That's ridiculous. We need to have transparency, and why the heck can't you hand count ballots to confirm what comes up on those machines? Something is very wrong in America when elected leaders are protecting that, not asking for voter ID, not pushing forward with analyzing what's actually going on behind the scenes and some of this voter fraud through vote harvesting.
Jim, we got to take a real quick break here, but let me say there's something even more than wrong when you have a celebrity like Liz Cheney coming out and poo-pooing the possibility of ballot harvesting, et cetera, et cetera. I really lose faith in our particularly left-wing politicians when they say that. Real quick break, you guys.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
On with KER Politics. We're going to talk a little bit. We're recording this on Friday, late afternoon. We're going to talk about what happened down in San Francisco Thursday night when Paul Pelosi was attacked in his home by an assailant, an intruder with a hammer. The only comment I can make about that, by the way, and I thought about that this morning, is, you know, two wrongs don't make a right. Jimmy, comment.
No, absolutely not. No one should be threatened in America because of their beliefs or their policies. You know, right. That's unacceptable. We can't accept that. It's interesting, though. There's some very interesting information that's coming out just here in the last hour or two. Apparently, this guy entered Pelosi's house through potentially a broken window. That's the initial estimates. And when the cops got there, he was actually in a standoff with Paul Pelosi, where both of them were standing there with hammers. And apparently he grabbed the hammer from Paul Pelosi with the cops there and began to beat him. So that's actually kind of strange.
Yeah, it's really strange.
Apparently he lives in Berkeley. His wife is a nudist activist. That he's put a lot of different things out on social media.
Yeah.
So, you know, mental stability, you know, a lot of questions here. Bottom line is, no one in America should be threatened because of their political beliefs.
Of course not.
And no one should be. And I think that this is the very disturbing part of it to me. Here's the Speaker of the House. He's third in line to the presidency in this nation. And she didn't have security enough to actually keep somebody out from going through a broken window in their house in downtown San Francisco.
Yeah.
And this is directly reflective to the crime policies that the Democrats have allowed to just, you know, explode crime around the country right now.
Well, I think it's a fairly good point. I want to talk about the rapidly increasing crime rate in the country later on, or maybe we could do it in this section. But first, I want to talk about a column that a woman by the name of Lynn O'Donnell wrote for a publication called Foreign Policy. She reported that Afghanistan's elite National Army Commando Corps, who were abandoned, interestingly enough, by our country and other Western allies of ours when the country fell to the Taliban last year. The members of this particular special force have been contacted by Russia to join the Russian military to fight against the Ukraine. That seems kind of interesting to me. Jimmy, what do you know about that?
Well, okay, so I worked with the Afghan commandos and, you know, with the overall what they call the National Special Operations Command in the region under Resolute Support, the RS mission in Afghanistan. And it had taken many, many years to build a capacity with, you know, 20 to 30,000 Afghans and the credibility, the capabilities, the training for them to be able to counterterrorism actions on a professional level and still maintain their loyalty. And what happened when the Biden regime basically completely undermined the Ghani government and withdrew and actually favored the Taliban, these people were left hanging. Now, these people had worked together, been trained together with Americans for now nearly two decades, some of them for at least, you know, 10 or 15 years. And they were very skilled individuals. And they did it. They were doing a very good job. They were actually working effectively to counter both terrorists and the Taliban, but they were working together with U.S. Policies, principles, U.S. air support, a lot of other things that gave them the confidence. Once they lost that and it was pulled out from under them, then they've got nothing to do but hide right now. So I don't know how accurate this report is, but it would make perfect sense. The Russians have, you know, a border with them. They would be looking for people that would go under contract and help them fight. They're very desperate for soldiers right now. And the unfortunate reality is there's a good possibility that some of these people that were trained by the U.S. Will be fighting against, you know, with the Russians in Ukraine.
Afghans, yeah. Yeah, no, not against the Afghans.
Against the Ukrainians.
The Ukrainians, right.
And again, this is one more time where we've made a tremendous mistake in supporting somebody and then pulling the rug out of them in the last minute, which is exactly what happened in the late 70s when the Russians finally I'm sorry, in the late 80s, when the Russians finally withdrew from Afghanistan, we stopped supporting and doing anything to help the Afghan government that existed, that remained there after we'd be supporting them for so many years to actually fight the Soviets.
You know, Jimmy, I was thinking about this article last night because I did a little bit of research on it and found out that the Russians are also in the process of recruiting members of penal institutions, in other words, prisoners, to join the army. I find that to be really interesting, and I can't fathom that Russia doesn't have a large enough population to fill its army with conscripts.
Well, I mean, what happened was they announced this mobilization,
yeah,
where they wanted to raise 300,000 troops. And they were getting, you know, former soldiers, people that had done their conscript time before, and officers, maybe retirees. Hundreds of thousands of Russians left the country.
Yeah.
Went to the Baltic states, went to the Republic of Georgia. They left because they did not want to be a part of this, which shows a very big concern underneath the facade of the media and
right.
the spin in Russia. And of course, to people here that support in the West that support the Russian actions, there's a real problem with the Russians logistically, with you know, policy-wise, with what their intent is, command and control, and they've had a lot of losses, and they're very concerned about actually having, you know, success there. If they don't have success, Putin's in a very difficult political situation. So they're desperate, and that's the reality that we're seeing right now.
Oh, I can't believe that somebody in Putin's organization can't come up with a way for Russia to get out of that particular conflict and save face at the same time. I find that to be really interesting, Jim. The research that I did on this particular article yesterday was interesting in the sense that I guess I answered my own question when I read that Russian men within the conscript age group were not allowed to leave the country, and the airlines were contacted, the ticket offices were contacted by the government and saying, you can't, without permission from the government, sell these people tickets to leave the country. That's just, it just verifies your point, Jim.
Well, yeah, and I saw the lines. I have people and friends that still in those bordering areas right now.
Yeah.
There was a mass exodus, and some of them, you know, had nowhere to go, and they're moving into different areas. Again, like in the Republic of Georgia, that, you know, miles and miles of people waiting at the borders to come across on foot,
yeah,
and a lot of people moving out. So yeah, it's a problem. It's a very serious problem for the Russians, politically and militarily. They don't have the support that they need in order to be successful.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It'd be interesting to see whether this whole thing comes out. I made a comment yesterday in our editorial that I think it's going to be resolved probably by the end of this year. And I
think we're done with time now.
I'm sorry?
We're done with time.
Be right back, you guys.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
What about that for the top of the hour news for this Friday? It's pretty interesting in my opinion. I want to say one thing, and that is I want to admit that I did get the booster. I got it because I was under the impression, the false impression, that it really wasn't going to cost me any money, and I didn't really care one way or the other. And Jim has done some research on the second booster, and he's basically saying it looks like there are a lot of faults with it. Jim, you got the mic.
So what's happening now is a lot of information is beginning to come out on the boosters and overall on the vaccines, and it doesn't look good for the CDC or the FDA. So Columbia University and Bethel Israel Deaconess Medical Center, they've both have pre-published studies that are out for peer review right now. showing that the boosters have no meaningful improvement over the original shots, or they certainly don't have any significant improvement against the BA5 or the Omicron variants.
So, in other words, I wasted my time.
Right. Although there's more information, it's not just wasting your time. There's more information coming out that, in fact, the vaccinations and the boosters over time, when they diminish in effectiveness, they also potentially undermine your immune system, which requires another booster, a continuation of boosters. So that's some, there's some reporting and some studies that are out there looking at that. National Institute of Health of in the UK has some information on that. I think a few other European countries and Israel have information on that. So we know now from Pfizer executives themselves that the boosters were never tested against transmission. So we know they may have limited, if any, impact on the ability to transmit. We know that you can get the vaccinations and the boosters and still get COVID.
Yeah, we do know that.
That's factual. There's no question. And potentially the negative effects are way more significant than any other vaccine that's been put out on the market in the past.
Let's talk about the negative aspects, Jimmy.
Yeah, so we know that myocarditis and pericarditis for young males is much more prevalent based on the vaccinations, and that's been by cardiologists around the world identifying that problem. Some of these syndromes, I can't remember the exact names, but some of these syndromes that actually affect the neurological processes in your ability to move.
Yeah.
For some people, we know the blood clotting has had a significant problem. And we know that there's been like well over 1.5 million adverse reactions reported in the CDC's VIRS system, their vaccine, you know, the system that they've designed in order to actually record adverse reactions. So those numbers are staggeringly higher than any other vaccine in history.
Yeah.
And we've shut down, the FDA and the CDC have shut down vaccination programs, in particular the one in the mid-70s over the swine flu, for much, much less negative reaction, even on a per capita basis. There were about 60 million people that got the vaccinations in the mid-70s for swine flu. There were, scores of deaths and a handful of neurological syndromes. And they, I think it was even less than 1,000 overall, and they shut it down. Now we've got numbers way beyond that that are, and they're continuing to push these vaccines. And here's the really disturbing information that is becoming clear in Freedom of Information Act requests, FOIA requests from people like a whole host of different organizations that have been asking for Freedom of Information requests on CDC and on the discussions with the FDA. And it appears there are emails that show that the CDC was pressuring the FDA to approve the boosters without actually having any human trials.
Why would the Center for Disease Control take that action? That makes no sense whatsoever.
Well, it does if you're looking at a political narrative where you want to continue to get people to get vaccinated, and that pressure is coming from influential pharmaceutical companies and members of the CDC advisory boards or the FDA advisory boards that are actually have financial interests with these pharmaceuticals companies. So it makes sense that way. It also makes sense that they want to double down and not look like they are incompetent, especially as they're rolling out new vaccines. Because in fact, once they admit there's a problem, then they look from the back end of it that they were lying from the beginning. Now, if you continue lying and it comes out, it's only going to be worse.
Yeah.
I think the problem is the entire system has been so jury-rigged and influenced by different political agendas and financial agendas that it's been very hard for honest people to come out and say, hey, we need to hold up on these issues. Because you were immediately attacked in the press, you were immediately attacked in social media, and you could be fired in some of these organizations by coming out and saying, hey, wait, we need to slow down here. And that was under tremendous pressure, I think, from political entities and the administration.
Jimmy, let me ask you a question that may seem a little bit out of place, but I don't think it is. I think it's very much in front and center here. Yesterday, Thursday, Facebook took a plummet in the price of the stock. They plummeted basically for the entire trading session. Do you think that has anything to do with what you're talking about right now?
Well, I think
a lot... Do you think people
lot...
are starting to realize how bad social media can be?
I do believe that some of the investors are looking at this and saying, oh my gosh, when this stuff all comes out, who is influencing, shaping the political narrative,
right,
shaping the COVID narrative, that, you know, people are going to be very angry. The more facts that are out that in fact there were lies and influence, people are going to be incredibly angry.
But is anybody willing to publish those facts?
Well, they're coming out now because they can't hide it. You know, they can't hide it. They tried to hide it. They tried to lock up all that information from the Pfizer review for 75 years, and that was overturned by a judge. A lot of this is coming out because of lawsuits and these freedom of information requests that maybe they thought they could get away with. But people like Ben Shapiro, who has a tremendous audience and actually runs the Daily Wire, which is an information organization that's more focused on conservative views, he changed his tune. He was a staunch advocate for vaccination.
You bet he just was. By the way, one minute left, by the way.
Yeah, got it. And he advocated it strongly, and he's woken up. He's like, oh my gosh, all the information, it looks like that the government, the media, and Big Pharma were all lying to us. And he has a tremendous voice.
Yeah.
We know that Joe Rogan, who has, you know, over daily 16 million listeners, he's saying the same thing. So you can't push back and put the lid on this genie as much as this administration is trying to do. And that's the unfortunate reality that we're having to wake up, that there was so much corruption involved here. And a lot of people are paying the price for it.
Well, let me ask you this, Jimmy. Can you imagine what it will do to the credibility of the Democratic Party if everything that we're talking about in our editorials and our radio program come true? Kind of need a real quick answer on this.
I think it's going to destroy the Democratic Party, but I think they're destroying themselves anyway with all this progressive agenda.
I think you got a good point, Jim. Ladies and gentlemen, stick around. We'll be right back to wrap up KER Politics. KER Politics. You know, Jimmy sent me an article yesterday entitled Analyst Election Polls Underestimating Republican Margins by as much as 5%. In a generic ballot released this week by USA Today, Republicans are up 4 points over Democrats. And that's a huge change from USA Today's previous poll in July, when Democrats led the Republicans 44-40, as opposed to being behind by 4 points. Jimmy, what are your comments on that?
My first comment is that I don't think the polls going through the summer were accurate at all in the first place. I think the polling was, and pollsters that are primarily supporting, you know, Democratic initiatives and candidates, were careful to ensure that it didn't look like the Democrats were going to get hammered because they needed to continue to get funding. And if it looked bad, then they don't get as much funding. So I think they are selective in who they chose for their polls. And I think now they're having to become more accurate back to the way they were back in April and May, or, you know, March, April, and May, when it showed the same numbers that we're seeing now. So obviously there's selective choosing of who answers questions of polls. The way you write the polls are very important. And then, of course, now in order to keep credibility, they can't be off by 10 or 15%. They've got to be closer in the 3 to 5% range.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it was fabricated. And I do think there are some very important issues about undercount that this article mentioned a little bit.
Well, I'll tell you, there a lot of articles have been coming out recently since this Fetterman thing that people are predicting right now a red landslide in a couple of weeks in that election. I'd like to see that happen. Do you think it will, Jim?
Well, again, if we have legitimate elections and we have transparency in the process and we can ensure that voting machines work, that we don't have vote harvesting in places where that's illegal, if we don't have people, you know, stopping the count in the middle of the night and then pouring more ballots in, yeah, I think there's a possibility that this is not just a red wave, but a red tsunami.
Yeah.
And here's why I think these undercounts are significant. So how many people were happy with their children being locked out of school for an extended period of time over COVID?
Very few.
How many people are happy? Remember, 75 million people, if those numbers are at all accurate, voted for Donald Trump in this last election.
Yeah.
They didn't go away. They weren't intimidated away by the Department of Justice or Joe Biden telling them that they were a threat to democracy. They're actually looking at the world and saying, wait a second, what is going on? But they are probably not going to say something out loud for fear of retribution as the Department of Justice arrests people for being involved in minor events, trespassing or singing at an abortion clinic.
Yeah.
And of course, the Mar-a-Lago raid, all these issues that the Democrats use to kind of alienate an entire half of the nation, half of the voter population, only kept people from being honest about how they're going to vote. And the probability is they're frustrated with what's happening in America right now. And those people are going to come out in droves. And those independents that typically don't care that much are feeling the pinch, not only in the intimidation, the censorship, but with the inflation, with the continued border problems, with the crime issues, and looking at the status of America in the eyes of foreign policy and seeing how quickly we're deteriorating. And I think that's really going to bring out a lot of people. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a massive red wave, red tsunami, as they say.
Yeah.
If all things are valid and legitimate, you really can't see what policies the Democrats can run on. And abortion has not been the issue that they thought it would be.
Yeah. No, it doesn't appear to be, which I find to be very interesting. I mean, I am anti-abortion, but again, my opinion is, you know, that's kind of an individual decision. But I don't think, quite frankly, that I'm talking strictly from a moral standpoint, by the way. But I got to tell you, I don't think it's nearly as big a deal to America as a whole as the Democrats think it is. You know, and a good example, when I say as Americans think it is, the Patty Murray race here in Washington, basically her ads and the other gal's ads are very, very slanted simply towards the abortion issue. And I really wonder how much Washingtonians really care about that.
There's a certain amount of the voter electorate that is very motivated by women's rights issues.
Yeah.
And you know, my body, my choice type of a thing. But it's actually quite contradictory with the mandatory vaccinations. So that's a problem because it's got to contradict in some of the people's minds, especially independent voters. So you've got the hardcore left and the problem is it's younger, motivated, progressive white women that are arguing for these issues.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to gain the traction because the the mothers, the suburban moms that are out there, they're frustrated with gender education in their schools, that are frustrated with the inflation and buying gas, they're going to come out. You know, they're going to say, wait a second, something's wrong here. I can't afford gas. I can't afford food for my family.
Right.
And I think there's no way that they're going to make a decision based on that simple possibility of someone else having the choice to have an abortion in a situation where the United States is in such dire straits economically.
Jimmy, we got some. I got some emails from local listeners who really want you to talk about the ineffectiveness, your rationale about the ineffectiveness behind the COVID second booster. Can you do that in 3 minutes?
Well, yeah. I mean, of course, the segment we did just before here really kind of encapsulates what the studies are showing now. But just to kind of wrap this up, you're getting more and more information that the government and pharmaceuticals, the propaganda machines with the press, really silenced factual evidence that showed we ought to be very cautious about the vaccinations. And with the COVID boosters right now, and what you're seeing from some very, very experienced doctors and analysts, is the mRNA technology itself has complications and very dangerous impacts to pregnant women.
Yeah.
It spreads the mRNA into the actual spike proteins that are created because of the mRNA nanolipid, you know, messengers into your body. It spreads that into children.
Mm-hmm.
And the potential problems are significant. They weren't researched enough. They didn't do enough human trials on it. It was, in my view, I've said it from the beginning, I never wanted to be a part of a global experiment, but that it turns out that this is, in fact, what we're seeing right now.
Yeah,
there's more and more evidence,
yeah,
more documentation. The vaccinations did not work as advertised, and the boosters, according to the latest information, do nothing to benefit you any more than the original vaccinations. But there are significant risks that were not reported for people, for some people. And a lot of people have been fine, but we do not know what the long-term ramifications are. We cannot know what the long-term ramifications are because, look, most of these trials go on for, you know, 7 to 10 years,
yeah,
for a vaccine. How can you say that within a year or two that you're going to have answers when some of these legacy problems may come up a long time in the future? And the fact that media and Twitter and Facebook and the government got involved at the behest of pharmaceutical companies to silence those voices is incredibly dangerous. And thank goodness, at least Twitter is starting to turn around to open up some of those views.
Yeah.
Now that Elon Musk is taken over.
Yeah, they really are. That was basically, I think, you know, good for Elon Musk to do that. I had the second booster, and I'm not even sure why I had it. I just did. And anyway, having said that, I hope nothing happens to me. Jimmy, 30 seconds left. Wrap it up.
Yeah, so, nobody wants something bad to happen to anybody. I didn't get any of the shots, and I'm proud of that.
No,
I've got pure blood, and my family didn't. And over time, we'll see what happens on this. But in the end, we've all of us, and those with the vaccines have still gotten COVID. So anyway, we'll be back next week. We'll have plenty of things to talk about. And thank you for listening to the KER Politics.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.